Success Match Show, broadcasting live from the Skyview Network Studios.
Hey, happy Thursday to you, and welcome to the Brad Sesmatch Show. And obviously, it takes two people a lot of days to fill in for Brad because he does such a tremendous job. That's just my way of just, you know, trying to score points with him. This is Thursday, and I'm Jeff Munn from Arizona State Women's Basketball, and wherever else they'll put me down in front of a microphone, and to my right, your left, Arizona State, former ASU basketball student-athlete and current ASU basketball radio analyst, Kyle Dodd. And this is almost kind of like, it's funny, it's June the 2nd. This is a basketball day because the NBA finals are starting tonight.
Yeah, big-time basketball day. And not, you know, sometimes this kind of year, it's not that exciting. And the NBA finals have been some duds over the last couple of years, but this seems like a rematch of two really good teams from last year and a really exciting brand of basketball. So it is a big day. I woke up feeling good about basketball today.
Yeah, and there's a lot of other things basketball related that we're going to get into on the show today. Our guest list, we have Doug Gottlieb, who Kyle arranged to get on the show for Brad a couple weeks ago. And he's going to join us to help preview game one of the finals tonight. And we'll also, I know Brad talked a lot with Doug about the draft, and we'll kind of go over it again, because as big as the finals are, Kyle, given the fact that the Suns have three first-round picks, there's a lot of buildup, too, to the draft. And we all know, once the finals end, it's like finals end one day, literally, it seems like the draft's the next.
Yeah, you go right into draft mode, and I think over the last couple of years, the Suns have been stuck in that 14 spot for, it seems like, years and years. And so finally to be in a spot where they're in the higher part of the lottery at four there, there's some excitement and there's a number of different ways they could go. And I think just more than anything, the speculation and the excitement about the different ways they can go at that spot or that pick, you know, it has everybody excited.
So a lot of basketball talk. We'll also talk about ASU basketball, which is near and dear to both of our hearts. And a story yesterday that kind of flew under the radar a little bit, but I think it's really worthy of more than that and a pretty serious mention regarding ASU men's basketball, and we'll get to that later in the show. But let's start by talking about, I should mention also very briefly, news of the day, the D-backs lost last night in 11 innings to Houston, another game where George Springer had his way with a walk-off home run in the 11th inning. They wrap up that home-and-home series with Houston this afternoon before they go to Chicago for the weekend with the Cubs. All right, now, you just said it. I think a lot of years in sports, whether it's the Super Bowl, the World Series, what have you, when you have a rematch from a year before, it doesn't generate as much excitement. I think this Cleveland-Golden State matchup is just the opposite. I think there's actually more hype this year than there was last year.
Yeah, I think so. I think you have star power. You have, obviously, LeBron and Steph. And the fact that Cleveland wasn't at full strength last year has a lot of people talking. You obviously have Kyrie Irving back and Kevin Love back. And in Cleveland, you're saying, hey, if we had them last year, we would be the defending champs. And Golden State on the other side says, hey, bring it. You know, we don't care who you put up, you know, at the other guard spot or you know, Love back as a big, bring it. We want to show everybody that we're the champs, and we set a record this season and in regular season wins, and we want to top it off with another championship.
There are a couple of things, and I want to get to some audio and from a press conference yesterday, and let's go ahead and get to that. Steph Curry was talking about the comparison between himself and LeBron James. And we'll talk about LeBron in a minute. But Steph had some really interesting comments yesterday about how he's not trying to compare himself with LeBron James. Take a listen.
I'm not in the business of ranking or debating who's what. At the end of the day, it's about winning. And the fact that, you know, we won the championship last year and the last team standing, obviously, is what was most important to me. Us being back here against the Cavs again, there's obviously storylines and whatnot that, as a basketball fan, are pretty cool when you have two teams fighting for the same trophy once again, and trying to, you know, play at a very high level to help our team get there. You know, at the end of the day, that's all I'm worried about. It's kind of it's really annoying for me to kind of be that's not what I'm playing for, to be the face of the NBA, to be this or that, or to take LeBron's throne or whatever. You know, I'm trying to chase rings, and that's all I'm about. So that's where the conversation stops for me.
By the way, this is a video program. I forgot. I'm a radio guy. I always think about sound. Sorry about that, Eric Sorensen, but we do have video that backs up the audio a lot of cases. Okay, I didn't have a problem with what he said, because you always want to have players that say, it's about the rings, I want to win. And I'm not sure there are a lot of people that are really uncomfortable with what he said, but it's raising a lot of eyebrows, I guess.
Yeah, I mean, I think he's lying. for all accounts, Steph is obviously a great person, and I think he gets it. I think he knows that he said all the right things. He's saying those things to keep his teammates, you know, in the loop. And it's almost like a couple years ago when they started during the Super Bowl, I think it was the Ravens or someone did it first, where they announced the team and the whole team came out. They didn't do the starting lineups. The whole defense came out together. And it's a good thought, but then every team did it after that. And it's like, okay, we get it. We're a team. But, you know, to be honest with you, if Steph is as good as he is right now, and I think he's, you know, as good as there is out there. If you don't have the goal to be the absolute best player in the world, then you're not, he wouldn't be as good as he is. I mean, I know he trains that way. I know he works out that way, because there's no way he would be as talented as he was if he didn't have that goal in the mind. And you hear guys like Kobe Bryant, who said it in the past, absolutely, I want to be the best that ever played. You know, and LeBron said it, I want to be the best that's ever played. And along with that comes the team accolades, and that's what your goal is. Exactly. You want to win as many championships, but the problem I had with it is saying he's annoyed by it. Well, it goes with the territory. And if you're the best player in the world and at two-time MVP, then you probably want to be the best player in the world. So don't act like it's a bad thing, you know.
Kyle Dodd there, Jeff Munn here. Let me get a thought from you before we start breaking this series down. A lot of people have mentioned the fact, and rightly so, this is 6 years in a row that LeBron James has been in the finals. As a player, you know what a toll that's got to take on a guy, and yet his game is still at an incredibly high level. Win or lose, and obviously he wants to win, I think the basketball community has to step back for a second and be impressed with that, don't they?
Yeah, absolutely. I mean, the amount of work that you put in, and the offseason is so much shorter for a guy like LeBron, and we saw it at the end of a career like Kobe, you know, where he really broke down his last 3 or 4 years. And I think that's due to the fact that he played, you know, almost three extra seasons when you think about all the postseason games. And a guy to do that year in and year out, and I know people give him a hard time about his record in the finals, but to get there 6 years in a row is pretty impressive. And, you know, I think he does need to win a couple of these, you know, moving forward to cement his legacy, but it is impressive on its own.
All right, let's get your thoughts about this series. Watching the Golden State-Oklahoma City series, the thought kept coming back to me. You know, the Warriors make a lot of threes, and it's a good thing because they don't seem to be the phrase I would use, rebound responsive. The ball comes off the iron. There's not guys going for the ball. And I'll start there first. Am I reading that correctly with them?
Yeah, I think absolutely. I think when you expect every shot to go in, I think they don't rebound. You see how many highlights have you seen Golden State where they make the pass, you know, to Steph, and the bigs are just running down the floor because they expect to make every shot. And ideally, as a basketball coach, you probably don't want your bigs running down on defense. You'd rather sit there and rebound. But, you know, we were talking a little bit before the show, but if Golden State shoots the basketball like they do in certain games, you're just not going to beat them. They have that many shooters, and when they're making threes to your twos, they're making 20 threes in a game, it's going to be impossible for you to beat them. So I think although they don't rebound the basketball that well, with their ability to shoot the ball the way they do, they got to be probably the favorite going in.
Now, to that point, and this is something else I brought up before we came on today, I think the real key guy for Golden State, a lot of people may say it's Curry. I think it's Klay Thompson, because Curry obviously is option one. If he's not shooting the ball well, they're not going to redo the offense and say, okay, now we're going to go inside. They're going to go find another outside option. And a lot of nights, especially in the postseason, Klay Thompson's been the guy that's bailed them out.
Yeah, and arguably Klay is as good a shooter, or if not better, just shooting the basketball, pure shooting standpoint. I know they've battled in the three-point contest, and Klay's got him a couple times, but Curry does so much else on the floor as far as creating off the dribble and creating a shot for himself. But you're right. When Curry doesn't have it going, it's not like they have to go, okay, well, we better pound it inside to Azeeley or Draymond or Bogut. They can still play their same style of basketball, and Klay, you know, can lift them and elevate them up. And we saw that in Game 6 in OKC. I mean, Curry was not himself, and Klay was on fire there in the second half and probably single-handedly kept him in that game, and they stole Game 6 in Oklahoma City. So I think guys like Klay and Draymond, those glue guys for Golden State, are as valuable, you know, if not more valuable than just Curry by himself.
So if you're Tyronn Lue, do you take the approach? And Cleveland, I'm not suggesting they do something that's out of character, but to counteract what Golden State can do defensively, do you have to turn this into a slowdown game when you have the ball?
I think they got to junk it up a little bit. I mean, I know Cleveland likes to play fast themselves and get LeBron out on the break, and he's a freight train when he is on the break. But I do think they need to junk it up a little bit. I mean, it's when Golden State is running their stuff and as efficient as they are, and they're shooting the basketball the way they do, it's a real challenge. I think the big challenge for Tyronn Lue in this series is, how do you guard the ball screens? How do you guard the pick and rolls? I mean, there's a number of ways you can do it, but no way seems to be the right way when you got Steph Curry as the guy coming off the ball screen. So we'll see what he does, but he has a lot of – it's a real test in his first NBA Finals, just like Kerr had, you know, last year, first NBA Finals, and see what you can do.
It's a fascinating series, and again, you don't normally get this kind of intrigue on a rematch, but you've got it this year for sure. Doug Gottlieb, CBS basketball analyst, hosts the Doug Gottlieb Show on radio and TV, and he is scheduled to join us in a couple of minutes to preview the finals, talk a little bit about the draft, and maybe tell us some things about Kyle that Kyle doesn't want publicized. You think he will?
Yeah, he was dogging me last week, I heard, on my kid's flag football. They post too many videos.
Oh,
so.
See, no, there you go.
Doug's a great guy.
We'll keep that off to the side. But we'll talk more hoops with Doug Gottlieb coming up after break. It's Brad Sesmatch Show. Kyle Dodd, Jeff Munn, glad to have you with us on Sports360AZ.com and AZCentral.com. It is Thursday, and it's game one of the NBA Finals tonight on the Brad Sesmatch Show. Kyle Dodd, ASU basketball radio analyst, a guy that has forgotten more hoops than I, Jeff Munn, will ever remember. And we join you on the Brad Sesmatch Show on Sports360AZ.com and AZCentral.com. We're hoping to be joined momentarily by Doug Gottlieb. In the meantime, in addition to, and we alluded to this in our first segment, in the midst of the finals, you've got the NBA draft. And obviously the interest is building here because the Suns own three picks in the first round, including the number four pick. Every time I bring the draft up to somebody, they'll say, not another guard.
Yeah.
You know, and right now I'm looking at NBADraft.net, and they do a mock draft, and they've got Dragan Bender from Croatia going with the fourth pick. They obviously, Ryan McDonough's got to get this one right.
Yeah.
And they got to go big. They have to go big.
I think it's such a sensitive topic, the guard topic with the Suns right now, because I think the public, the fan base, feels like we've butchered it at the guard spot with or McDonough has with the Dragic and the Isaiah Thomas and Bledsoe, and we just have too many guards and too many not enough basketballs for as many guards as they had. So I think it's a very sensitive topic. That being said, Chris Dunn would be tough to pass up at four on a normal situation, but I kind of agree with you. I think that you got to take a leap of faith on a guy that most people consider the top talent, the top prospect in Europe, European basketball right now in Bender. And as a Suns fan, though, you would have to understand he's probably a couple years away. He's
right.
Probably not going to be Porzingis, coming in like the Knicks got last year, but ultra talented and upside is extremely high and the ceiling is extremely high. But like I said, it's tough, and I'm just biased being a guard myself. But Chris Dunn, it'd be tough to let him go by. But I think because of the situation at the guard spot for the Suns over the last couple of years, I think you almost have to go big.
You say that about Dunn, and I think you have to say it, too, about Buddy Hield, because while this mock draft that I'm looking at, and I think most mock drafts, have him going to Boston with the pick prior to the Suns, if for some reason the Celtics don't go Buddy Hield and he's sitting there at four, as tempting as it would be on some level, they can't do that either.
Yeah, I don't think so. I mean, you're essentially getting a guy that would be very similar to your best player right now in Devin Booker, and those guys play a similar style game and similar style basketball, and I just don't think that would probably fit, although it would be tough. Again, the guy like Buddy Hield, who put up the numbers he did at the college level this year and is super fun to watch and would probably sell some tickets. I think, again, you got to be smart. This is a very interesting time for the Suns, I think, because, like I said in the opening segment, for so long they've been stuck at that 13-14 spot, and now you got a spot at four, and then you got two other first-round draft picks, and I think the fan base and everybody wants them to get something done. Let's revamp this roster. Let's get it rolling again through the draft.
I'm going to revisit that with the three picks in a second, and this is Kyle Dodd, and I'm Jeff Munn. This is the Brad Sesmatch Show. I just want to get a thought from you, because I've heard you talk about this in interviews after the season ended, about Ben Simmons. It kind of went on a roller coaster. At the start of the season, oh, he's the lock number one pick, and then it kind of went through a dip as LSU struggled through the season, and then gradually as they got to the end of the season, even though LSU wasn't that good, just, and we're getting to Doug Gottlieb in about 30 seconds, just a 30-second thought. Ben Simmons to you, there's no question Philadelphia should take him number one?
I think you got to. I think he has the most upside, and I think he has the ability to see the floor, and his game fits the NBA style, pretty well. I think he's got to shoot the basketball better, obviously, but I think, yeah, you'd be foolish not to take Ben Simmons probably at number one.
And with that, Doug Gottlieb does join us, CBS basketball analyst. He hosts the Doug Gottlieb Show both on CBS Sports Network and CBS Sports Radio. Obviously, you see him on a lot of the NCAA tournament coverage, and he joins us this morning. And you just heard Kyle's voice, Doug, so Kyle's here. And let me start first. We were talking about the draft, but obviously game one tonight in Oakland. I've made the point that even though this is a rematch from a year ago, that maybe this year should be there's more buildup tonight maybe for this series and the start of the series than even a year ago. Do you agree with that?
Yeah, well, I mean, the way I'm going to term it on my show is I don't think it's an excuse. Like, excuse has a negative connotation, obviously, with my, you know. I think it's an explanation that LeBron didn't have Kevin Love last year, only had Kyrie for game one, and, he went down. I think it was an overtime he went down. That's an explanation for why it wasn't a fair fight. But there are no more explanations as to this team. They've had an easier run through the playoffs. They have a coach that has been to the NBA Finals as an assistant and as a player before and has more, I think, respect within the locker room and coaches a style that fits this team better. He has, I think, a better roster, a better bench. They had no bench depth last year. They do this year. And he has Kyrie and Kevin Love healthy, as well as the fact that the Warriors – have taken some haymakers from Oklahoma City and even from Portland. So with that in mind, with the exception of not having a home court advantage, the Cleveland Cavaliers have as good a shot to win a title with LeBron James as they're ever going to have. They're fully healthy, fully rested. There are no more explanations for why they would come up short. I think there is a ton of buildup. There is a ton of hype. The 73 wins helps. The fact that it's LeBron, it's Steph Curry, it's, I don't know what the number is, like six of the last seven MVPs or something crazy like that. I mean, this is a ridiculous showdown. So it should be great basketball. And the Thunder were actually built, they were constructed initially to compete with the Lakers. Like, remember, they traded for Kendrick Perkins because you had to have two low post defenders going against the Lakers because they had Pau Gasol and they had Kyle, help me out. What's the other
Bynum.
Dude?
Andrew Bynum.
They had Andrew Bynum, right? So that's why they went out, because Ibaka had to be a weak side shot blocker. He wasn't a low post defender. And you had to keep Kevin Durant off of Bynum or off of Pau Gasol. So that's why they went with two low posts. I bring that up because the Cavs reconfigured themselves. And I still think that the investment in too many power forwards may come back to haunt them, because they could, instead of having a Mozgov, they could have another wing. But this team was at least partially constructed to beat the Warriors. And so when your blueprint is to compete with a team like the Warriors, you should be at your best in this series. And that's what I'm looking forward to.
Hey, first of all, Doug, I saw your little man switch hitting on IG the other day. I know we go back and forth. That was impressive, being a youngster. But
yeah, now, how old's your little guy that's that went in first place in
seven? Just turned eight.
How old is he?
Just turned eight. Yeah.
K is eight.
Yeah.
Now, what do they do? What do they do in Phoenix? They do coach pitch or player? How do they do it?
We play kid. We play real baseball. We play up. Yeah. Halos
well,
baseball.
That's the whole thing, is they won't let him play up until next year.
He's a stud, though. I saw the videos. No, I hear you. I feel like everybody's talking about, you know, on the Cleveland side, having obviously Love and Kyrie. To me, the one that interests me is Kevin Love, because, you know, people are talking, well, he didn't play last year and he stretches the floor. I think what Kevin Love is going to show us this series is whether or not he can defend the screen and roll. I just feel like if you're Golden State, you have to involve him in every pick and roll imaginable. And Tyronn Lue's got some decisions to make on how to guard that. But do you see that as a key?
Yeah, no question. Now, let's also remember, as much as all of us are thinking, okay, it's Steph Curry and he's going to match up with Kevin Love, and I'm going to take Steph Curry in that matchup every day. There's a little bit of football to this, and I know, Kyle, you're close with Kurt Warner. And so the whole way in which Golden State has kind of taken the league by storm is, two thoughts. One is obviously their proficiency and the volume of three-point shots that they've taken and made. But the second part is, when Kurt was with the Rams, Mike Martz had one tried and true philosophy, that the biggest mismatch in football is a running back being covered by a linebacker in space. Right? That's get the ball to Marshall Faulk being covered by a linebacker, and that's a mismatch we're going to take every single time. Well, that's what the Warriors want to do, is they want a big matching up with Steph. And because Steph cannot consistently go by a player his size. It's one of the conundrums with trying to explain how Steph is a superstar and is rightfully the most valuable player, but guys in the NBA are like, yo, he can't guard Russell and he can't guard, you kind of go through the elite point guards in the game, and sometimes he struggles to get a step on those guys, but he's still incredibly effective. And it's their use of ball movement and various screen roll action trying to induce you into some sort of switching or creating that mismatch. So, yes, obviously that's an incredibly important part. But I would also say that to me, if I'm in Kevin Love's ear, like, look, Kevin Love can score in the low post. Like, can he face up and shoot? Yes. But if he's matched up early in the game with Draymond Green, like, you got Draymond Green, and Draymond Green is a good low post defender for his size, but Kevin Love should be able to exploit that. And if you can get Draymond into foul trouble, or Draymond has to be less than physical, that completely changed. Draymond was ineffective for most of the previous series, and that's a big reason Oklahoma City nearly pulled it off. So I agree with you that ball screen coverage is really, really difficult. I also think, though, that people kind of look at a linear, well, there's only one way to beat the Warriors, and that's you have to switch. Like, one, you're not switching with Kevin Love, most part. And two, there's seven different ways to play a ball screen. Yeah. There's more than one way to skin a cat in which you can be effective. So I'm fascinated, as you are, to see what Tyronn Lue does. But I also think that you can try different things. You can try different lineups, different personnel, different styles of guarding the ball screen and see what works. I will tell you that while their defense is probably not going to be as effective as Oklahoma City's is, their offense should be more effective because they have more guys that can score. Oklahoma City is really a limited offensive team that has to beat you in that kind of game with two scorers and a bunch of defenders, shot blockers, rebounders.
Doug Gottlieb from CBS Sports joining us for a few minutes, and we've got him for just a couple more minutes before we got to let him go. I know that when you were on with Brad last week, week before, there was a lot of talk about the NBA draft. And so I don't want to just decipher it all over again. But has there been anything, or should we expect anything, to change a lot of these mock draft projections in the next couple of weeks? There's not going to be a workout that's going to change anybody's mind.
No. I mean, I heard you ask Kyle about Simmons. Mock draft guy is in a fantasy world if they think they're taking Brandon Ingram ahead of Ben Simmons. I mean, it's not really close. And, you know, I fully understand that if you didn't pay attention to LSU, you're like, wait, the kid's team didn't make the tournament and the SEC wasn't deep. The fact was they were going to make the tournament. They were improving. And then Kyle Hornsby, who's the only other player who could actually shoot the basketball, gets hurt out for the year. And now you got no space. And they weren't a particularly well-coached team. I don't think they're a very talented team. And, you know, they struggled to find ways to use him. He's somewhere in between Lamar Odom and LeBron in terms of style of play. Left-handed, but everything around the basket, he actually shoots with his right hand. I mean, the NBA game is all about space and pace. And if Philadelphia can reconfigure their personnel to where he gets the space to isolate, you know, for example, on a Draymond Green, like Draymond Green has no chance against Ben Simmons facing up. Ben Simmons is 6'10" and a half in shoes, long arms, goes both ways, can really pass with either hand. And he can shoot. He needs to gain confidence and shoot a volume of shots. But there's plenty of NBA players that came in the league that weren't high-volume jump shooters that have become breakout stars. And I think with the space of the NBA game, playing for a coach who, oh yeah, by the way, coached his dad like 20 years ago in Australia, it's not even close. You take him, and that's not to take a shot at Ingram, who I think is going to be a really good pro if he puts on some size and he holds the size well, and he can find a team that can play him. He has to play. You know, the problem with playing Ingram is he's a non-rebounder. If people want to compare him to Kevin Durant, like Kevin Durant averaged like 11 rebounds a game in college. But he's 20 pounds heavier in college. So Ingram's very, very light, but very talented, and is going to be a really good pro. He just doesn't have what I think Ben Simmons has in the ability to create shots for himself and for others in the NBA space.
Doug, we're out of time, and I know you are as well, and we really appreciate you coming on. And Kyle's right. We do play real baseball in Arizona. Just thought you'd like to know that. And
No, it's hard. Kyle knows. It's hard because I try not to be that. Like, my dad was that guy, you know, like, oh, we're going to put him in a league in which he can. And he started playing when he was 3 in Southern California. And my dude, not only is he pretty good, Kyle, but he loves it. Like,
we got to get him out here and have him play some tournaments with us.
We should, you know, we should. We should bring him in as a ringer. He might transfer in the offseason. But he's a great kid. And he's trying to, you know, break the mold and be the first lefty third baseman.
Yeah.
Hey, that
first.
Would be something.
I'm battling
first,
the same thing.
Only
I get it.
Across the diamond.
That would be something. Doug, appreciate it. All the best. We'll talk to you soon.
See you, boys.
See ya.
Doug Gottlieb, great guy. I met him in Lincoln when I was filling in on ASU men's game, Herb's first year against Nebraska. Just a terrific guy. I'm not telling you anything you don't know because you know him very well. But and he's done a terrific job at CBS. We're up against a break. I want to react to something that he mentioned about defending the Warriors, and we'll do that after this on the Brad Sesmatt Show on Sports360AZ.com and AZCentral.com. Brad Sesmatt Show on Thursday, along with ASU basketball radio analyst Kyle Dodd. I'm Jeff Munn. We're going to use this segment to talk about the to-do list for Ryan McDonough, but there was one thing that Doug Gottlieb mentioned that I wanted to get a thought from you on, and he talked about guarding Steph Curry and that he can't get around guys his size. And when he said that, I thought about all the different visual images I had from that Oklahoma City series of Steven Adams going out to guard a three-point shooter. And in Curry in particular, and they would launch the shot anyway. And so that brings up the question, if you know that Curry has trouble with guys his size, what's Steven Adams doing out there?
I think they're trying. Golden State does such a good job of getting the switch. And anytime you're a point guard, I mean, my entire life, the goal was to get a switch. And you want a switch because you want to take the basketball back down and throw it to the post with the 6'9", 6'10 guy on a guard. Well, Golden State's the exact opposite. They want to get a switch, but they want to get the big the heck out of there. And they want to let Steph Curry go to work against a 6'10", 6'11 guy. And what Doug was saying, as a guard, it's not that Steph Curry can't score on Russell Westbrook, but consistently Russell Westbrook, he'd be able to get into him, and he's athletic enough to at least stop him, occasionally. But with the big switching off to Steph's threat to shoot from anywhere, and as a big anyway, you always have to give guards space. And Steph's so good with his eyes, just sometimes just lifting his eyes is enough to get a big out of their stance, and then that's where he's able to create and get in the lane. But it's, for Golden State, I think that's the key of the series. If you can get the switches and you get a Kevin Love on a Steph, it's going to be a long series for Cleveland.
Now, there's one other thing, and you mentioned it in the opening segment, and we will get to Ryan McDonough in a second. You talked about the fact that Golden State, a lot of times, in their offense, they're so confident in the three-point shooting, the bigs will release down the floor.
Yep.
We hear the phrase all the time, defense creates offense. In a case like that, I almost think to myself, offense is creating defense, because if the bigs release, you're not, obviously there's not going to be a transition opportunity off a made hoop. But as an offense, well, let's use Cleveland as an example, they also can't get mismatches when they go down to their end of the floor because the bigs are already set up.
Yeah, and Golden State does a good job in transition D as it is, but it also helps when the ball's going through the hoop a lot of times. So, I think the games where you've seen Golden State struggle, they've missed shots, and that's created the long rebounds. And a guy like LeBron, if he can run down a long rebound and get ahead of steam, it's going to be trouble for Golden State. Now, that being said, Golden State's just such a good shooting team. Again, a lot of times you're taking it out of the net, and their defense is set, and the bigs are back. So it's just a fun brand. Honestly, it's like something we've never seen before. I mean, I joked before the show, but it's almost shocking when Steph shoots the basketball and he misses. You're like, well, what happened? Did he slip? I mean, it's just crazy how well that guy shoots the basketball, and really that whole team shoots the basketball.
Which could be another reason why there is so much interest and intrigue, because as you're talking about the entertainment value of Golden State, it kind of reminds me of the way people around basketball felt about the early years of the D'Antoni-Nash Suns.
Yeah, 7 seconds or less, right?
Right.
That was the motto. And in Golden State, it's, as a casual basketball fan, if you haven't watched an NBA game all year and I tell you, hey, just do me a favor, sit down and watch 10 minutes of that, and you're a casual basketball fan, I would be very hard-pressed to believe that you wouldn't go, wow, that is pretty cool. Because, I mean, it's a guy shooting from 40 feet like he's shooting from 15 feet. It's behind-the-back passes, flipped around the perimeter to a guy just shooting off bounce in the corner, and Klay Thompson or Draymond Green running all over the place. I mean, it's just a fun brand to watch. And a lot, the misconception to me is they say, Golden State has such great ball movement. Well, they do share the ball and they pitch ahead and they trust each other. But once it does get down into the half court, I think the fun part is you get a lot of isolation situations, and you got probably the most skilled player in the NBA, going to work on ball handling, which is crazy, because it's been a long time, maybe since Larry Bird, where we've seen a guy that can dominate the game and be a superstar without playing above the rim. I mean, Steph Curry's not a guy that's going to go dunk on you. He does it with comfort level with the basketball, being able to get guys on their heels and then knocking down bombs. So I think it's fun to watch. I think people can associate with the 6'3 guy. But when you're trying to say, oh, I look just like LeBron, you don't.
No.
LeBron's 6'8", 270,
no.
And he's coming at you full-blown.
Yeah.
So.
Like you said, he's a freight train. Let's turn it around to the Suns and go back a little bit to the draft. But more than that, Ryan McDonough has an awful lot of work to do before, during, after the draft. So the first question I would ask you is, every time I've said they ought to hang on to the picks, everybody responds to me and says, they can't be that young. So, do you take the other two first-rounders, not number four? Do you take those other two first-round picks and just kind of dangle them out there and see what it would bring?
I think so. I think, the NBA draft is so different than the NFL draft. It's if you had three first round picks in the NFL draft, you'd be, you know, you'd absolutely love your chances to rebuild, you know, and do a great job in the draft. But especially later in the first round, you're getting to guys where you never know. You just don't know. I mean, yeah, for every Ginobili that, you know, is an early second round pick, you get a guy that never plays for you. So, I mean, I think it'd be intriguing to me if I was the Suns to say, hey, just see what's out there. See if I can get a veteran with, you know, that with some talent or fill a need with those picks. And, you know, maybe a team that is trying to get rebuild completely and get super young might bite on that. So, I mean, I just think you have to explore it. I don't know that you get what you need out of it, but I think you definitely have to explore it.
A lot of the attention free agency will be on Kevin Durant, but I don't want to see the Suns go through another failed courtship, a lot like last summer with LaMarcus Aldridge. There are other guys that are going to be out there, and if you match them up with good young talent, it might get you the result you want.
Yeah, I think so. I think, you know, Kevin Durant's obviously the number one name, but, you know, the reality is he's probably not even going to consider Phoenix. And I don't think, to be honest with you, I think Durant's going to sign a one-year deal with Oklahoma City and come out next year where he can make a lot more money. And he goes out, you know, he comes out the same year as Russ. And I think that makes more sense than people are talking about. But if you're the Suns, there are guys that are out there that can fill some needs for you. And I think you're right. You're going to try to balance, you know, getting an established player that would blend nicely with your young talent and the young talent that you're going to get through the draft. And I think it's important for the Suns to get a good, solid, you know, veteran player with good locker room skills too. I mean, we saw it with the Morris twins the last couple of years. Yeah, they were talented, but are they good locker room guys? Do they mesh with the young guys? And I know a lot of the teammates, they liked them and stuff, but how good were they for the Suns? And I think that you need to get a guy that can command the locker room and can play, you know, and that being said, you're going to be able to surround him with some young talent with the draft. So I think the Suns, it's a very interesting time for the Suns.
Another thought comes to me, and before we go to a break, to get a thought from you, because it ties into college basketball. Out of this series, the Western Finals, a lot of people, and rightly so, gave a lot of credit to Billy Donovan for the way he handled matchups game to game. We've seen the highway is littered with college coaches that try the NBA and fail because, in most cases, they're walking into a bad situation. Donovan didn't. My question, and I'm just going on what your hunch or your sense is, would you be surprised if other contending NBA teams that are looking to make a coaching change would think about a college coach?
Yeah, I think that to me has been the biggest thing for every college coach that's tried. And you can't tell me, you know, Rick Pitino's not a good basketball coach and wouldn't be a good NBA coach. Well, he would just put into a situation in Boston where he had a terrible roster. And
right.
Same thing with Calipari and the Nets. And I think these guys, if they were thrown into a team that had Western Conference championship talent or NBA Finals talent, which the Thunder did, I think they'd be a lot better off. So, I mean, I think that is something that you'd look at if you're an NBA team. But, you know, I think, you know, on the same note, I think the Suns got it right. And Earl Watson, I think he's a perfect fit for what their roster is going to look like next year. And I think he's going to command that team the way it needs to be commanded with the blend of young guys and whatever they do in the free agent market.
Yeah, it's the Watson situation was similar in the sense that he took over, but he inherited a clearly dismantled roster.
Yeah.
And he seemed to bring a sense of order to what was going on in terms of just day-to-day operation. A thought, too, about Jeff Hornacek, and it looks like the Knicks are finally going to officially announce that he's been hired. There was an interesting story in the New York Times a couple weekends ago when the rumor first popped up, and people said, why would Phil Jackson be interested in Jeff Hornacek while wanting to run the triangle? Well, there is it's kind of a 6 degrees of separation. Hornacek, of course, played for Cotton Fitzsimmons. The first time Cotton Fitzsimmons was here in Phoenix in the early 70s, he ran, and I didn't know this, and Jerry Colangelo taught about it, he ran the triangle.
Yeah.
Because he had been an assistant to Tex Winter at Kansas State in the 60s. Tex Winter, of course, and, you know, was basically the father of the triangle. And so it wouldn't be shocking to me, and I'd get a thought from you on this, to see Hornacek come in and say, okay, I'll run it.
Yeah, I think people around the NBA and that are watching casually, I think they think, oh, it's either run the triangle or don't run the triangle. There's so many components in NBA sets that have triangle, you know, principles within an NBA play. And I mean, a pinch post, which, for example, is, you know, just a double high post and you hit a post and you send a guy backdoor. Almost every NBA team runs that action. That's a part of the triangle. And I wouldn't be surprised to see maybe Phil, although Phil's been known to be very stubborn on this issue, you know, give Jeff the option to maybe run a hybrid type triangle. I mean, he has some triangle sets out of it, but, you know, here, you know, everybody's been, I think that was, you know, said it was part of the deal that he didn't have to run the triangle, but I don't know. Anytime the name Phil Jackson's involved, it usually means you're going to do it his way or the highway. So it'll be interesting to see what goes on in New York. But I mean, the reality is the NBA game's changing so much, and it's tough because you know, some of that stuff you got to adjust. And if you're Phil Jackson, you got to at some point adjust, you know, to the game.
We need to take a break. We're going to come back and talk about ASU basketball. A really interesting note came down the on AZ Central yesterday, and I really want to give it some attention. We'll do it after break. Kyle Dodd, Jeff Munden for Brad, Sports360AZ.com and AZCentral.com. Thursday on the Brad Sesmatch Show, NBA Finals open this evening, and it's always great to talk basketball with Kyle Dodd. I'm Jeff Munn. We both obviously have an awful lot of emotional and personal investment in ASU basketball. I do the women's games on radio. Kyle works with Tim Healy on the men's games. By the way, Tim is in Fort Worth. ASU baseball opens their regional play tomorrow against Gonzaga. The weather forecast, not that good. And if we had more time, I'd get a thought from Kyle about the fact that the West Coast, the NCAA Baseball Committee obviously thought that the United States ends at the Mississippi River or something because they didn't put a regional in the West. But it has a lot to do with the quality of baseball, I guess. Let's focus on ASU men's basketball. Doug Haller had a story yesterday, and I'm only pointing this out because it seemed to be a subject that got discussed for years and years and years. Oh, ASU, they almost can't schedule tough in the non-conference because of this factor and that factor. Well, as you know, you look at Bobby Hurley's non-conference schedule for this upcoming season, and that blows that myth completely out of the water.
Yeah, I mean, not only is the schedule ridiculously tough, the majority of the non-conference, you're on the road. And I think when you're talking about being an elite college basketball program and year in, year out, having a high RPI and putting yourself in the discussion to be in the tournament, that's going to pay dividends. And, it may be rough at the start, but as we saw last year, I mean, that was a tough non-conference schedule last year. And there was times when I was thinking, hey, if we win 6 or 7 games, I might be feeling pretty good. They were 10-3 going into the pack, and unfortunately they had a lot of injuries and some guys banged up and ran out of bodies during the pack. But because of their tough non-conference, they put themselves in a position where their RPI was in the you know, late 20s, early 30s going into the league, which basically means you go 500 in the conference and you're in the dance. And unfortunately they weren't able to do that, but they've put themselves in a position schedule wise that it's going to do you a lot better than playing, you know, 11 home games against, you know, guys, you know, that are plus 200 level RPI teams. I mean, it's going to be a tough schedule, but should be fun.
The other thing, I know that this is something I talked about, that part of the way you get that non-conference schedule boosted up is, as you said, for a while, you have to go to the other place. And then eventually, once you get your program up and running, and hopefully fans turn out and start filling the building, then those programs say, okay, we'll come to your place. And the best example of it is, and it was a schedule that was made before he was hired, but Bill Frieder's second year at Arizona State, 1989, he opened his opening home game, Roy Williams in Kansas.
Yep.
Think about that. That's almost unthinkable now to think that Kansas, whoever was coaching him, would open their season at Tempe. But it does happen. But the year before, they went to Lawrence and got their doors blown off. You have to do those things. If you're going to build a program, you have to say, okay, we'll go to your place a couple times.
Yeah, I mean, you see it now. I think a really smart, and I've said for years, I thought that the smart move would be, let's do a home and home every year, you know, from here on for the next 20 years with UNLV and New Mexico. Those are two programs that are close to you, that are essentially always in the top, you know, close to the top 25, and it's easy travel, and you could do that on a Tuesday night without kids missing class. And they've done that with UNLV, and it's been great. I think it's been good for ASU. But now you sit get in a situation where last year they went to Creighton. Well, you get Creighton back at home this year. For the second year in a row, they're playing Kentucky. Kentucky's on your schedule for 2 years in a row. If you don't think that's a big deal, it's a big deal recruiting-wise all the way around. And they're doing all the right things. They're putting the steps in place. And with the recruiting class that Coach Hurley's been able to establish and bring in, it's a time in Sun Devil basketball where we're seeing things change, and it's going from, oh, we're the sleeping giant. Well, we've been the sleeping giant in football and basketball for 35 years. I think we're all tired of hearing that. I think right now we're going to see what we're about, because Coach Hurley doesn't care. He's going to throw the squad into the fire, and they're not going to back down. They'll play, you know, you've seen it. His motto is, we'll play anybody, anywhere, and it's going to be a fun schedule, and I'm glad to be a part of it. We got some good trips, too. I get to go to New York twice.
Yeah.
Cancun.
That's
or
never
Atlantis.
Been.
And
Cancun?
Vegas. And, yeah. I mean,
I forgot about that. I got places for you to go in Cancun.
So I'm personally excited about the schedule, because I get to go to some cool places. But, yeah, it should be fun.
We got a couple minutes. Tell the fans about the recruiting class, because now I believe ESPN has moved up Bobby Hurley's class to number 14 overall.
Yeah, they brought in some big-time guys. They got 3 4-star guys. Sam Cunliffe, which is a guy from the Seattle area, which I talked to Lorenzo Romar, who dominates in recruiting up there. They every big-time, that's a big-time basketball state, and every big-time player out of Seattle goes to Washington, and they've been able to keep everybody home. And I talked to Coach Romar at the Pac-12 tournament, and he said, man, I'm still upset about Sam. He said he is going to be a big-time player for you guys. Your fans will love him. He's exciting. He's athletic. He can shoot it a little bit, and he's going to be an exciting wing. So, I mean, I think Sam will add some flair to this class. And then they just picked up another big man, which they much needed size, another 4-star, and I think his name's Romeo White. And then, another big guy early. They signed early in Jethro that – we'll add some rim protection. He's a defensive game, from what I hear, is far, you know, exceeding where his offensive game is right now. But they said he's as good a shot blocker that was on the AAU circuit last year. And so, I mean, I think that's something that ASU lacked last year, was rim protection and just size underneath. But they got some guys, some horses, and some bodies that'll be in here ready to play. And you add that with some returning guys like Trey Holder and Cody Justice and some talented guys like Obino Oleka, and should be exciting to watch and see how they do.
And Trey Holder's going to play in an all-star tour of Australia with other Pac-12 players.
Yep.
And I always like seeing players do that, because I think it does nothing but help their game when they get out internationally and play against international competition.
Yeah, we were able to take a trip to Australia when I was going into my senior year, and I thought it paid big-time dividends for my game, being able to go over and play some pro teams and just experience a different culture and have some fun playing hoops.
Rick, who wins the finals?
Got to go Golden State.
All right. I understand that. I'm going to
Better series than people think,
though. And that's what we're really rooting for.
Yep.
Good to be with you.
You too.
We'll see you down the road. Kyle Dodd with us. Jeff Munn, thanks for being with us on the Brad Sesmatch Show. Sports360AZ.com and AZCentral.com.